This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Michelle Belanger about demonic cleansing. When it comes to this, and we could obviously go into 50 branches of the ghost family tree, but I want to focus on the area of things that are darker, things that, okay. that some would call demonic, things would require an exorcism, or things that fall into that area. And quite often, I know the word demon gets overused and people often jump to that conclusion. It makes for better television. It makes for better stories. It is what it is. Producers love it. But when we're talking realistically here about this sort of thing, and people, one of the more common things that we run across are people inadvertently or somewhat foolishly intending to call up the dead and communicate with them in some way, shape, or form. Quite often we hear about that through a Ouija board. We have a joke on one of our shows we call October Ouija Awareness Month, where we just tend to save a lot of Ouija board stories for that month and share them and how badly they end up turning out. But it seems to be an interesting thing and a running theme in many Ouija board stories. I'd say maybe one or two out of 100 end positively. Quite often it's, you know, we were young and dumb and we were playing with it. And then something seems to enter, something that is conscious, something that seems to have some sort of an intent, not just the, you know, now the room and the house feel really kind of negative and I feel depressed in here consistently, almost like a seasonal depression, but more so weird things are happening here that seem to have a purpose that shouldn't be going on. When we enter that world, and this again probably falls into, it's going to be called different things depending on belief systems, but something truly negative that has entered into our world. Let's talk about that for a little bit. And what is that? What are we dealing with when people call those things up or those things somehow invade our lives, whether intended or not?
Well, I'll say that I have to agree to call it demon, but I also agree that the term is horribly overused.
Yeah.
And especially kind of taken out of context. So full disclosure is exactly yesterday I turned in the manuscript for my 10th anniversary edition of the Dictionary of Demons. So all of this is very, very fresh in my head.
Great.
so you know, in Western civilization, the roots of our beliefs in demons stem from Sumer and Babylon, like the cradle of civilization. And I think it's important to understand, like, their perspective of demons definitely has come down to us without us necessarily knowing. Demons were powerful, intelligent, non-human beings that were agents of destruction, disease, and discord. Some of these were children of gods. Some of these were just strange beings that just didn't seem to belong. But the things that they had in common was that they were very strong spirits. They were very intelligent spirits. And it was their nature to cause trouble. And then sort of like an addendum to that was, for whatever reason, they didn't just randomly cause trouble. They really liked to focus on people. Humans attracted them and their interest for some reason, which is what makes them kind of problematic and causes all of these stories about possession and whatnot anyway, of which the Sumerians and Babylonians had quite a few. They had a whole class of priests that was dedicated expressly to dealing with obsession and possession and addressing stuff with these demons. Our current word for it, demon, comes from Greek daemon. And it is important to note that the Greeks had both eudaimonas and kakademonas. So basically good demons and bad demons. So given context with that, like, they perceived that there were spirits that were a step above humans and a step beneath the gods. And some of them were good, and some of them were bad, and some of them were indifferent. And we would probably... I mean, that pretty much answers our question for, like, angels versus evil angels, mm-hmm. and fallen angels, all of which kind of fall under a big lump. I have encountered a few rare hauntings, and I'm going to stress these things are way rarer than a lot of the television shows will imply. It is good TV for everything to come down to somebody being possessed by a demon.
Sure.
It's also lazy paranormal work to assume it's always a demon, because that thing that just possessed Johnny in the corner may just be a really angry dead human who has figured out that they can do that. Okay. Because we've definitely done investigations with that as well, where, you know, somebody's grandfather was just, he hadn't been a good person in life, and he continued the habit in death, and once he figured out everything he could do as a dead guy, he did it in spades. Mm-hmm. My criteria for, am I dealing with the thing that I'm going to reluctantly call a demon, is it non-human, demonstrably non-human? Okay. Is it intelligent, almost hyper-intelligent? Okay. Is it actively malevolent, and is it focused on people? And I can think of, I don't think that I can count over one hand's worth of fingers on the ones that I'm like, I'm certain that this is what I was dealing with in hauntings. And I've been doing this, what, if I count college, close to 30 years?
Yeah. When you have these sort of things that are out there, and that's interesting, where we talk about, it's maybe not a demon, it's just your the asshole uncle that is dead and decides to come back. And
but really, I wasn't sure if I could swear.
Oh, you can swear all you want. And okay, we get complaints about it all the time, but I refuse to stop. and you know, it's going to do what it's going to do. People in death seem to still be like they were in life in many cases. They're not necessarily having a revelation and suddenly they're this wonderful human being. But when it is something that is that dark, and we're talking about, you know, the origins of, and you were talking about how it goes back to Babylonian culture and things of that nature. What's really interesting about that to me, and I want to know what your understanding of this is from all your research and work that you've done. When we think of demons nowadays in modern culture, just a speck in time on the full spectrum of all this, I guess the image that comes to us in our world is, the Catholic priest standing there with the crucifix, exorcising the demon away. But we're talking about some of these things having existed pre the Catholic Church, pre that sort of an exorcism experience going on with the crucifix. In just the ecosystem of all this, when someone does try to exercise something out, does it have more to do with what the belief system is of those individuals and basically an opposite positive energy being pushed towards it than what is the actual object being used? More so, like I said, what the individual is believing in than the physicality of the object, almost like we were talking about with Sage earlier, where pledge could be just as effective if that's what you really believe is going to be the most effective.
I think the faith of the person doing the exercising does play a role, particularly in that person feeling that they are A, capable, and B, safe, and that there is a higher power that is helping them be safe.
Okay.
You know, that being said, that I think that there are people who are, I think it's entirely possible for somebody who's left-hand path, i.e. somebody who doesn't necessarily believe in a God, mm-hmm. to do the same thing if their belief in their ability to do this is strong enough, that they, that willpower, I think, plays a role. But if we go back to, because I was just reading through some of the old Babylonian Sumerian exorcisms to brush up for an article, there's this one that, I mean, the lengthy recitation. So in the Roman Catholic ceremony, what we know as the Roman ritual, these orations, it will be all these different names of God, all the different titles of God. And so it'll be Jesus Christ and the blood of the Lamb and the Holy Spirit and God, the Lord of hosts, and just kind of over and over and over again, just different variations of the name of God. And that is an inheritance from what the Sumerians and Babylonians would do. But since they weren't monotheists, it was like five pages of, I exercise you in the name of this God who does this thing, and I exercise you in the name of this God who does this thing. And like, they would pretty much throw every God they could imagine at it, hoping one of them actually had some power over this thing. And part of that was some of the demons in their culture were actually the children of gods who'd just gone wrong. Like, they were somebody's punk kid who was just an asshole, and it was their nature to be an asshole, and they needed to figure out which god was in charge of them. In later Jewish tradition, and the Christians inherited that, the god, instead of the god being in charge of one of these demonic entities, it was an angel. And that angel had some sort of strong connection. But the main point was knowing a name, knowing the name that had power over the entity, and knowing the name of the entity itself. Mm-hmm. And this was another one of the reasons why there were litanies of names and associations, often culled from multiple cultures, just on the odd chance that you'd hit on the one. It's also why the name of the entity is asked. You demand it in the course of the exorcism. That goes back to the case of the Gerasene demoniac in, I believe it's Luke and Mark in the Bible. We all know the story because it's where I Am Legion comes from.
Okay.
There's a guy who's possessed, and Jesus is, in the neighborhood. And so he goes to, cast the demons out of this guy. And Jesus demands the name of the demon that is possessing the guy. And it responds, "We are legion, for we are many." Things that have been quoted over and over again. And I know, chillingly in The Exorcist, the second part of that story is where Jesus casts these unclean spirits out into a herd of swine, which then go crazy and run off of a cliff, which, again, if you're familiar with the Bible, that's a story that's going to resonate. If you lived in Jesus's time and you heard that story, you would go, huh, that's somebody who's performing a believable Sumerian Babylonian exorcism, because you would get the name of the thing, and then you would usually transfer it into a substitute and then kill that substitute. Sometimes it was just a pot, a jar, that you would transfer the demon into that, and then you would symbolically kill the demon by shattering it. But frequently it was bloodier than that. You would transfer them to a pig, specifically, or a goat. There's a small snippet of one of those exorcisms in a book by Reginald Campbell Thompson. He was a big Assyriologist at the turn of the last century. And it's, you know, let the hair of the pig become his hair. Let the heart of the pig become his heart. And, you know, as you're doing this, it's implied that they're like taking parts of this animal. They're laying them on top of the person and sort of using them to like suck the evil out of it. And they would then like, so that the death of the animal would be integral to overcoming this thing. Which I don't recommend anybody tries to apply at home. I think coming at it with holy water is a far safer and saner modern option.
Is there ever a way to truly kill a demon, or does it simply just transfer its existence into something else? You had mentioned the story of the demons being transferred into the herd of pigs that jump off the cliff, or it being transferred to a jar that is broken. Is that simply a way of getting it out of whatever it's currently taken over, and then it goes to this other vessel, but then that vessel ends up releasing it on its own, and then it's back out there to play name that demon with the next person that it encounters?
If I judge purely by all of the ancient books that I have been reading over the past several years, from the Babylonian and Sumerian stuff to the Book of Enoch, which has some really interesting stuff about the origin of evil spirits, from a Jewish and Christian perspective, you can't kill it. You can't kill any of these things. You can inconvenience them. You can hurt them to a point where they go away for a while, but they are by their nature spirit and indestructible. In the Book of Enoch particularly, it just explicitly states that these will become evil spirits in the world, that they will plague humanity, and short of binding them, nothing seems to like get them to go away forever.
They're like the ultimate really shitty coworker, where you know, you can make life miserable. Eventually, they'll go away, but they're just going to go to another office and they're going to make life hell over there. So eventually they'll die, but you don't want to go to jail, so you can't kill them. When it comes to the process of naming the demon, I've always wondered about that. What is that? Why is that that the name has to be said for an exorcism to really be effective? Is it the tradition of it, or why does it, you know, somehow demand you play name that demon with it and somehow address it by its name when it knows full well, and you know full well, you're having this interaction, but somehow the act of addressing it by its name is so key to the event?
Well, I can say for certain that ties back to the cradle of Western civilization. The Sumerians lent the idea to the Babylonians and the Akkadians. The Babylonians gave most of their demonology to the Jews. The Jews gave most of their demonology to Christianity. There's obviously evolution that's happened through there. And of course, like Islamic ideas as well. But for them, demons become jinn. Broadly speaking, that's a huge generalization, and it's much more complicated than that. So the answer to that is to try to look at, you know, the oldest root of it. And in those ancient cultures, to name something was to create it. I mean, words had power. In one of the old sort of like creation stories, the world is sort of named into existence, and that does echo in the first few pages of Genesis, where in the beginning was the Word. So there is this very profound belief at the core of Western culture that language itself is magic, that language itself is power, and that if you have the words for something, if you have the name of something, you have some connection to or power over its essential being. And I think that that's at the core of that idea, that if you know the name of the demon, it's not just that you can exorcise it. There's a whole other tradition woven throughout like Middle Ages and Renaissance Europe, the grimoiric tradition, and it actually goes back farther than that, where having the name as well as the sigil, the symbol of the demon, allows you to conjure it, to compel it, constrain it, control it, get it to do work for you, or banish it. And all of those things were pursued, not just by, like, you know, skeevy necromancers hanging out in, you know, questionable back alleys, but actually popes practiced this particular type of magic, lawyers and scientists. I was the court magician of Queen Elizabeth. Dr. John Dee, who was probably her master spy, was pretty into all of it.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Michelle Belanger about demonic cleansing. Thank you so much for supporting the show, keeping us on the air, and allowing the Grave Talks to exist. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support, and thank you for listening.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.